Hello, mad or bad listeners. We just wanted to take some time to say a massive thank you to Podcorn, who is our sponsor for this episode. Podcorn is the easiest way for brands and podcasters to connect. It simplifies every aspect of podcast sponsorships. We have had such an easy and straightforward experience with them so far. You literally just simply sign up, view a dashboard of amazing advertising opportunities, and then you can write and submit a pitch and wait for the reply from a brand that you love. It's that easy to start monetizing your own podcast with sponsorships that work for your podcast. It's totally in your control and gives you full creative freedom and transparency. It's also suitable for podcasts of all shapes and sizes, which we think is amazing because obviously we're only starting off. So join Podcorn today. Just visit podcorn.com. That is Podcorn, P-O-D-C-O-R-N. Warning, the following podcast may contain descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. Any views are all our own and do not in any way reflect the places where we work. Hello and welcome to Mad or Bad. My name's Rachel.
And I'm Neil. And this week we're going to be talking about the murder of Dawn Ashworth and Linda Mann and the first use of DNA fingerprinting.
It's crazy to think in the early 1980s, DNA fingerprinting was not really a thing. Forensic analysis relied on blood grouping, post-mortem analysis, and police investigation. On November the 21st, 1983, 15-year-old Linda Mann took a shortcut on her way home from babysitting to never return. Similarly, 3 years later, on the 31st of July 1986, a second 15-year-old girl, Dawn Ashworth, left her home to visit a friend's house to never return. The story we are about to tell is one truly inspiring, where that eureka moment of discovering DNA profiling led to the eventual prosecution of the killer of both girls. Without this discovery, the killer would no doubt still be at large.
So let's go back to November 1983 in Norborough, Leicestershire, England. Norborough was, and still is, a quiet little village, home to about 6,000 residents. In 1983. It was a place where crime was practically unheard of. 15-year-old Linda was your normal teenager. A quiet girl described her family as having a cheeky face. She enjoyed school and had several close friends. It was a cold evening in November when Linda left for the 1.5 mile walk back to her home from her babysitting job. She had decided to take a shortcut, presumably due to it being late and also due to it being so cold outside. When Linda failed to return by midnight, her worried parents called the police.
I think both of these stories are massive learning points that you just should never take shortcuts.
No, and I think...
especially when you're a female in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame when you can't, but I'm afraid that's the world we live in, isn't it? And...
but I guess back then
when you were 15, how many did you...
I wouldn't have been allowed out at that time, to be honest.
Well, not necessarily 15, but when you were, I don't know, at any age, how often do you take, like when you were at university? Did you take a shortcut? Did you go anywhere that now looking back you'd think...
I've done some stupid things, yeah, but usually I was drunk, to be honest.
Yeah, but even so.
And there was a lot of rapes around. Well, I know there is a lot of the time, isn't there, around university areas?
Well, yeah, because it's
but there was an area that I lived in called Denny's Cross, and it's like, it's not a quiet area. Like, it's literally a crossroads.
Is
it's busy.
Up the hill, where you showed me?
No.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of like a little bit of a hub because there's like, you know, like your local Tesco shop. There's now like at a kind of a ramen shop where like, you know, you get like kind of rice and stuff like that. But even back then it was always busy because it was on the way to like a bigger shopping center. And a girl got raped there, like literally, not nighttime, like evening time, but it was still... You know, in plain sight of everyone. So it's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
So early the next morning, a hospital worker discovered Linda's semi-nude body just off a path known as the Black Path. Her clothing was thrown around and her jeans had been removed. Her underwear had also been removed and had been chucked somewhere in the crime scene. Due to it being a cold night, Linda had been wearing a scarf. It was evident that this scarf was used to strangle Linda.
Terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Linda was brutally attacked and sexually assaulted, then strangled and left for dead. As one would expect, news travelled quickly in this town. However, a physical search of the crime scene and surroundings did not turn up much evidence. A post-mortem did, however, provide important insight into how Linda met her death. The post-mortem concluded that even though there was very little sign of struggle to Linda's body, which meant she may have died quickly, she was definitely strangled and then raped. And I think it was on the grounds, or not on the grounds, but like just off the grounds of a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, and there was some initial
going to work, and I think people were saying, "Oh, it must have been, you know, a patient."
Because clearly, if you're mentally ill, you're going to be a rapist.
You're
going to
be a rapist. Yeah, you have to be.
Obviously, we're joking with that.
That is sarcasm.
Yeah. Samples were taken from Linda's body indicating the killer had type A blood.
However, my God, I have type A blood.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, however, this meant 10% of the population were now, in theory, perpetrators or potential suspects. Some people theorise that because Linda's body was found close to a psychiatric hospital, as we just said, that it must be a patient from there. However, police and psychological profiles were much more convinced that it must have been a man leading a more normal life, perhaps one who had a family and who had friends and relatives.
I always find this interesting, because, like, how did they come up with that?
Well, it's a whole...
it's a whole science in itself,
isn't
it?
I mean,
but it's like
criminal profile. I mean,
obviously they gain a lot of evidence from all the other murders and stuff that's happened, and it's most likely to be that kind of person.
Psychologist Professor Paul Britton, one such criminal profiler, worked on this case, and he was adamant that it was a local person who would be in a stable relationship. His apparent motivation for this offence being to act out his sexual fantasy of domination. This was in the very early days of criminal profiling, which was later, with some justification, in my opinion, heavily criticised in the Rachel Nichol murder case. I know...
Why was it criticised?
Well, that was a thing where it was the kind of the honey trap thing, wasn't it? Where, I can't remember his name, but a chap was, he was arrested for it, and he got, I don't know if he was convicted, but he was later found to be innocent. And I think the kind of criticism of that, I mean, that'd be the Metropolitan Police, wasn't it, in London, but so it was Wimbledon Common, wasn't it, was that the police stuck too closely to the profile that...
Yeah. They didn't have anything else to use, though, did they? So it was,
well, I mean, that was early 90s, that was. But even so, you know, but... He's wrote a couple of books, Paul Britton, and I know he used to work at Arnold Lodge, a medium secure mental health unit, in Leicestershire.
Huh.
You know, he did a lot of good work, but he did get kind of hammered for the
interesting. I must have a look case and see what books he has then, because I'd definitely be interested.
He wrote two books. I might have them somewhere.
What, on criminal profiling?
Yeah, and with the cases that he's worked on and everything.
Huh, with that's really
interesting. And he speaks about Dawn Ashworth and Linda Mann in it.
Cool.
Yeah, you can get them on Amazon for...
Yeah, I'll definitely be looking into that, because that's like totes my kind of thing.
Yeah, I might have them somewhere.
I don't remember seeing you with those books.
But he's done two, very good. They read like novels. I mean, I recommend anyone buy them.
Yeah, something that's like easily readable,
really good books.
You know,
really
informative. Cool. So, police questioned thousands upon thousands of people regarding Linda's death. However, the case remained unsolved, going on for months and then eventually years. Linda was buried in a churchyard not far from where she was murdered, and police even attempted to video the crowd at the funeral to see if any unusual people attended or if there was any suspicious activity. There were no eyewitnesses and all potential leads had been investigated. The town of Narborough remained in a state of continual fear that this murder rapist would strike again. I mean, imagine just like living in a little town and just knowing there's somebody around somewhere that is probably going to do this again.
Oh, yeah.
And don't know whether it's someone that you know or like, who is it?
I mean, one of our children, or yourself, you know, you just wouldn't want anyone to kind of go anywhere on their own, would you?
No, it is
daylight or not, yeah. Just because, as we'll see, it didn't just attack.
And I think it was a different time as well. Like, I don't think people were as aware of crime, especially in like little towns like that. You just didn't. It was a bit more of an innocent time, I think.
I think it was. I mean, I wasn't very old in.
I mean, I wasn't actually even born, so I can't really.
But I mean, looking back, I mean, your memory gets clouded by, you know, different things, doesn't it? But I mean, there was certainly. I can remember hearing about these cases on the news, and I think today, if it was like any small village today, that, you know, a similar kind of village to this,
yeah,
I think it'd still be quite sort of shocking, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm trying to think back to like being in Ireland, and like I came from a tiny little village. I don't even know the population, but it was small. And like, if something happened like that, oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Like, it'd be massive.
Because it's one of those villages that everyone knows everyone. Like, everyone's related to everyone, or everyone knows everyone, or something. Everyone's married to somebody who knows somebody. So you're literally living in this place where you're like, I probably know the person who did this.
You wouldn't want to go anywhere, would you?
No, it's really scary. So Linda's parents, however, never gave up hope that her killer would be caught and justice would eventually be achieved. 3 years had passed in Narborough, and life in this small town had eventually gone back to normal, or kind of semi-normal.
I suppose 3 years had gone on. You kind of get a more, you know, in the months after.
You get
it
more
happened.
Complacent then, don't you? That
you
actually
do, don't you?
Maybe
you think,
it was just a once off, somebody travelling through the town or
think, like,
something.
3 years, you know.
Yeah. So that was until the 31st of July 1986, where a murder far too similar to be coincidental took place in the nearby village of Enderby. Enderby was another small town, again approximately 6,000 people, and a neighbouring village to Narborough. How close was it, do you think?
I think there's Narborough, Enderby, and I think there's another one called, is it Littleborough? And I think they all just kind of go into each other.
Ah, okay.
You know, very small.
So practically the same area, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Kind of neighbouring village.
Yeah.
Dawn Ashworth was 15 years old in 1986. On the night in question, she had been to see her friends in Narborough. Taking a shortcut down Tenpound Lane, a stranger indecently exposed himself to her. This may have been the end of the incident, as upsetting as it would have been, but Dawn panicked and she ran, as probably most people would. She was followed, strangled and raped. Her body was dumped in nearby long grass, with some superficial attempts to cover with twigs and things such as that. This murder, 3 years on from Linda's, sent shockwaves through the local community. The police and some of the locals were adamant that it was the same killer.
I mean, because it's the exact same method, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, kind of, you know, she's taken a shortcut, isn't she? Yeah, she's taken a shortcut somewhere. She's followed by somebody, strangled and then raped. So it's exactly the same method.
And I know I saw on a kind of like a news report off YouTube, Dawn's dad saying that, you know, that I told her not to go down that, you know, take that shortcut. But he says, you know, it was a nice, because this wasn't at night.
Oh,
this
it wasn't. Wasn't.
This was in daylight.
Genie Mac.
And dad was saying, you know, it was a sunny day.
I just presumed it was nice.
Yeah, it was a sunny day. And, you know, everything's right with the world, isn't it? You're going to...
You wouldn't even think... But you wouldn't think anything of it during the day,
she
would you?
She would... That would be the last... She wouldn't even thought that would be a possibility, would
and
she?
And she probably used it millions of other times.
She probably did, yeah. But just didn't tell her dad, you know.
Yeah.
Witnesses saw a young man shortly after the murder of Dawn, seen close to the murder site. He was identified as 17-year-old
Richard Buckland.
He was identified as 17-year-old Richard Buckland. He was a local youth who had some level of learning difficulties.
Thank you so much to Baldy for sponsoring us for this episode.
Attention, all listeners.
We need to speak to you about a really important subject. Your man's balls.
Testicles? Knackers?
Whatever you want to call them. I'm currently 37 weeks pregnant, so it's fair to say I haven't seen any ball action in quite some time. However, I am aware that the big old Valentine's Day is coming up, and it also marks our first year anniversary. Neil, I do believe your balls have now officially crusted over.
How dare you! However, we are very excited to speak to you about a brand who wishes for all people with balls to get smelling and feeling yummy for V-Day. Ballsy are an amazing brand whose products are cruelty-free, paraben sulfate and synthetic dye-free and are made in the US of A, so you know it's good.
Neil, if you're lucky, I'll get you there. I'm nuts about you Valentine's Day gift set. You get a ball wash, a nut rub solid cologne, and a sack spray to spruce up your bits. And they come in 6 different scents. I'm kind of jealous there's nothing for my VV.
So visit ballwash.com today and give your ball some love. That's BALLWASH.com and happy Valentine's Day.
I'm nuts about you, Neil. For 20% off the I'm Nuts About You Valentine's Day gift set, use our code MAD20.
He had told people in the local community, including the police, that they were looking in the wrong area for clues and evidence regarding the murder of Dawn. His suspicious activity brought him to the attention of Leicestershire police, which, you know, it's gone to, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he was just very curious.
Yeah, I don't know.
In a kind of inappropriate way, but he probably just didn't realise that himself.
It does say about he had learning difficulties. And I mean, that's a broad term, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure.
It might have just been, you know, I mean, maybe he's doing a true crime podcast now, you know, 30
well,
years
yeah,
on.
Maybe the police are after us now.
Oh, I don't know. And that's in 30 years to come. No, but you know what I mean, though? You know, he might have just been sort of...
interested.
Yeah.
As people are. Nosy.
But obviously, yeah. I mean, Leicestershire police had no leads. So, and, you know, quite rightly, you know, he was interviewed under caution. And it was clear that he could not give any account of where he was at the time of Dawn's murder. I mean, I don't know how long he was interviewed after the actual murder. Because if someone said to me,
yeah,
what were you doing on
Thursday 6 weeks ago?
I mean, I suppose we would be in a slightly different position where... Well, not
necessarily, though. If you've a day off from work,
yeah,
I wouldn't remember what the hell I'd be doing.
And yeah, but obviously 4 or 5 days a week you're at work, so that would, you know, you'd be able to...
Harder when you're that age and, well, you're either in school and then...
Oh, yeah.
If, well, this was July, wasn't it, though? So they were...
He would have finished school. If he was at school, he was 17, so he may have left.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But he would have probably been on holiday.
Oh, yeah, he would have been on holiday then, yeah. The schools
and probably doing nothing. And when you do nothing, you don't remember.
No, because there's nothing of note in your day, is there? There's nothing to remember it by.
It reminds me of the Adnan Syed case from Serial, because that's the exact same thing. It was it was a day at school, but it was like a normal day, any other day. And, you know, if he's telling the truth, which we still don't know, and I wish I knew, because I'm so obsessed with that case, it's not even funny. But... you know, if he is telling the truth, it was just a normal day. And how is he supposed to remember? Because it was, I think it was something like 2 months after the murder that he was interviewed. He's like, how am I supposed to remember what I was doing?
Yeah, and the woman who did the, or presented that podcast.
Sarah Koenig.
Yeah, that's it. She was kind of, was like an example of how difficult it is to remember what you were doing. She asked different people, didn't she? What were you doing? And they all
got it wrong.
Was it work? Was I at school?
And they all had conflicting things of, oh no, I was with the, you know, I was at the cinema with this guy.
Yeah.
And the other guy was like, no, I wasn't at
the cinema.
No, I
couldn't have done. I was at work that night.
So it is really difficult to know.
So Buckland was subsequently arrested and held on remand. He was then charged with Dawn's murder, and he made an admission to have killed Dawn, but denied that it had anything to do with the murder of Linda.
And this whole false admission thing as well.
We didn't know that at the time, did we? The police, he made an admission.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know, and we never know what or if any...
happened in the police interview as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to be quite forceful, because that's the job, isn't it? They're not just going to sit there and say...
Yeah.
So did you, didn't you? No, well, all right then. You know, there's got to be an element of, isn't there? I mean, or otherwise...
I mean, from like police tapes that I've seen, you know, there's that confession tapes on Netflix. Mm. I mean, they're usually... Not usually, but from the ones that I've seen, they're quite like coercive and a little bit manipulative. And they're almost like, look, if you just... It's not just like, yeah, say you've done it and you're going to jail. It's kind of more of a like, you know, were you here? And, you know, it's okay to say it. Look, you get to go home quicker if you just kind
of... I mean, when we watch that, it's easy to think to you, that programme on Netflix, it's easy to think yourself, isn't it, that, oh, that had never happened to me. But if you're in there for hours and hours and hours...
But this is also a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
He's a baby. And he has learning death. You don't know what to what extent...
But, in this case, yeah.
But, you know, fairly vulnerable.
Well, I'd say very vulnerable, whether he's got learning difficulties or
yeah, he's only a young thing. Like, where are his parents?
You know.
I wonder where they're actually there.
We don't know. We tried to look in any information for that, but it's very difficult to find anything. I mean, quite understandably, he's kind of gone off the kind of grid since.
I blame him.
Or certainly, he probably hasn't. He's probably out there doing a normal job, but certainly information that you could, you know.
Yeah.
So, understandably, the local community gave a sigh of relief as it seemed the killer of two young teenage girls were caught, which, you know, you would be, wouldn't
you? Justice was served.
You just think, well, the police have got the, you know, that's it. And the police thought they had.
So, the detective in charge of both murder cases had some awareness of a potential new method in which DNA could be used to help in identifying suspects. Professor Alex Jeffries of the University of Leicester was contacted regarding DNA testing. So we'll do a little bit of information about DNA profiling and all that kind of stuff, just so we're all on the same page,
and I'm sure
I guess. I'm sure anyone listening to a true crime podcast knows this.
No more than us.
But, yeah. So basically, DNA are strands of molecules that contain a code unique to each individual person. Professor Jeffries and his team accidentally, through a failed experiment on inherited illnesses in families, discovered DNA fingerprinting. So by extracting DNA from their cells and using photographic film left in the development tank, a sequence of bars easily seen to the untrained eye can identify the unique code for each individual. The DNA from samples of semen left at the murder scenes were extracted and were found to have the same DNA code as each other. The DNA was compared to Buckland's DNA and it was clearly not a match. Therefore, it was impossible that Buckland could have been the killer of Dawn or Linda. The DNA semen samples also confirmed that one person was responsible for both murders, as police and criminal profilers suspected all along.
So Professor...
Alex Jeffries.
Yeah.
What a dude.
Certainly, yeah.
And team, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, did he write a book as well?
He has. I've not read.
That's another one on my list now to read.
Yeah.
A big long list of books that I
mean,
want
Amazon's
read.
Really good, isn't it, for all these kind of things.
And... cheap and cheerful, secondhand sorted.
Yeah, yeah.
So after 4 months in custody and a false confession, Buckland was released. Buckland thus became the first man cleared by genetic fingerprinting. He later said that pressure by police on interview led him to confess.
So the detective in charge of the murder cases, Detective Chief Superintendent David Baker, he's got to take a lot of credit here as well, because he put himself on the line. Despite having no suspect at all, and in an attempt to utilise the new method of DNA fingerprinting, detective in charge requested all males between the ages of 18 to 34 within the local area to voluntarily come forward to have a blood test in order to eliminate any potential suspects.
This is quite forward thinking, I think. Cause
it is, since 1986, seven, yeah.
And
definitely.
It's a, you know, a brand new science and...
And although...
It's a good idea.
Although the detective in charge, you would have seen that, you know, he would have obviously been privy to Alex Jeffries, sort of, right, okay, so it's the same killer, da-da-da-da. But evidence for its use in this, for DNA profiling in this manner, would, you know, this is the first time it was ever used for this.
Yeah.
So, like I've just said, you know, I think he's got to have a lot of credit for this, the police officer. I know he didn't have any other leads, but even so, he's still putting resources and that he's got to...
And the thing is, I mean, it's voluntarily, but it's kind of like, if somebody does come forward, great, you get to test them. But if they don't, it looks a bit dodgy.
Yeah, I mean, if a lot of people refuse to have it done,
yeah,
then not as dodgy. But yeah, the people that do have it done, even if you got 40%, at least you know that they're out of the equation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I suppose, you know, that'd be the worst case scenario, wouldn't it? If a lot of people wouldn't have it done. But at least you can...
It's one way of narrowing suspects.
Yeah, yeah.
When they literally had no other leads
So. Some local people were worried, understandably, as little was known about DNA fingerprinting. And, you know, could any mistakes have been made and then the individual becomes suspects? I mean...
I don't think people realised how specific DNA would be.
But you wouldn't, though, would you?
No.
Because I think...
Well, it was a brand new thing, wasn't it?
For this purpose, yeah. So thousands of men eventually attended voluntarily and thus were subsequently ruled out as suspects. However, one such man, 30-year-old Colin Pitchfork from the local area, refused to attend. Pitchfork was a married man with one young child. He had told his wife that he would not go for the test as the police may set him up, as he had a previous conviction of flashing as a youth.
What, flashing his willy?
Well, I don't think it was his fault, was it? All right. But I think he was, I'm not saying it's, you know, because he was only 30 then, and I don't know why old he was, say he was 15, you know, 15 years ago. It's not that long ago, is it?
No.
Pitchfork worked for Hampshire Bakery nearby Leicester, so the city of Leicester, which I think was about 10 miles. Whilst most of his colleagues voluntarily consented to the blood test, he said that it was a load of rubbish, with some of his work colleagues making fun of him, saying that he was, you know, oh, you're too scared to have it done, are you?
So the killer remained at large as we move into June 1987, when a female teenager known as Liz had been out at friends and got separated from her group. She had started to walk back home when Pitchfork came across her in his car. Pitchfork asked whether she needed a lift. Liz said in a jokey manner, "You're not a rapist, are you?" Liz felt safe enough to get into the car, fastened her seatbelt, and they both drove off. However, quite soon afterwards, Liz realised she was actually in danger as Pitchfork passed her turning. Liz instinctively acted by grabbing the steering wheel, succeeding in steering the car off the road into a grass verge. Good woman, though. Quick thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pitchfork remarked, "I thought that was what you wanted." Liz got out of the car and ran off. She never contacted the police and didn't tell anyone until much later. I mean, that was such a close call.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Such a close
call. I'm sure that's given some nightmares, isn't it?
Jeannie Mac. I mean, I bet you she didn't realise until years afterwards, actually, how close she actually was to being bloody murdered and raped.
Absolutely.
So psychologists believe that what saved her was the fact that she took control of him in the situation. Well, he probably just wasn't used to that, really.
No, he wouldn't have been, would he? Because on the two, Linda and Dawn, he was very much, you know, in control, wasn't he? And he wasn't used to this situation.
Yeah. Do we know what age she was?
I think she was around the same age.
Was she?
Yeah.
She did well getting away there.
She did. Pitchfork received several letters from the police asking him to attend for a blood test. You know, not just him particularly. I mean, everyone would have received reminder letters.
Yeah.
So we knew he had to act. If he took the sample, he would be proven guilty. If he refused to take the test, it would draw great suspicion from the police. Over the course of a couple of weeks, he gradually convinced the work colleague to give a blood sample in his name. Pitchfork said he couldn't take the test himself because he'd already taken the test for a mate who had had previous issues with the police. The work colleague refused at first, but eventually agreed to do so. I think just to shut Pitchfork up. Pitchfork went with his colleague to get his photo taken in a nearby photo booth. He steam ironed the plastic coating off his passport photo and placed his colleague's photo in its place. I never had one of these passports. I mean, we're talking back to the 80s. You couldn't do this now.
Oh, could you not? Oh, yeah, because they're all plasticky things.
Yeah,
now, aren't they?
But it was literally
a piece of paper kind of a thing.
Like a plastic over
like a plastic
your photo
overlay.
On it. Yeah. So you couldn't do it now.
What, did you not have a passport in the 80s?
No. His colleague went to give blood as Colin Pitchfork. Pitchfork, whose wife wondered as to why he was refusing to take the test, was quickly told by Pitchfork that he had finally gone to have the test. He showed his wife
the site where the blood was taken on his arm, which was covered with cotton wool. Unbeknown to his wife, Pitchfork had cut himself in that area with a knife in order to convince her. After his colleague had been for the blood testing, he was ill and was off work for a week. Therefore, he didn't know that Pitchfork had been telling people at work that he had finally been for the blood test. Obviously, the police knew that on such a mass call for blood testing that there would be a risk of people falsifying samples and detection would be difficult. Sometime after the test, the colleague was on a night out with others from work. During the night, he told other colleagues, when Pitchfork's name was mentioned in a derogatory manner, that he had taken the blood test for him.
Did people not like Pitchfork? Like, well, they at were, work and stuff?
I think they were kind of saying, like, he's a bit of a lecherous, you know, with women, that kind
bit
of thing.
Bit of a leech, a bit of a creep.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. One of his female colleagues who was there on the night out, she understood the potential implications of him taking the blood test for Pitchfork. And although still not sure that Pitchfork had committed a crime, she rang the police.
Good woman.
Yeah, absolutely. Pitchfork was promptly arrested, admitting there and then that he had killed the two girls. A DNA sample later confirmed this.
So at trial, he was sentenced to 2 life sentences. Police stated that he appeared to have no remorse or empathy for his actions. And when asked why he killed Dawn and Linda, he merely said because they happened to be there. So kind of a wrong place, wrong time kind of a thing, according to him. The colleague that took the test for him, who had no awareness that Pitchfork committed the crime, received an 18-month suspended sentence for perverting the course of justice. As the leader of his team, Professor Alex Jeffries was later knighted, and DNA fingerprinting remains a really integral part of crime detection and conviction into the 21st century. Since then, Pitchfork has applied for parole on several occasions for early release. It is reported that his character has improved and he has worked on his education and shows some empathy for his actions. It was reported in 2017 that he was having unsupervised days out in the community after having been moved to an open prison in 2016. He will be once again eligible to apply for parole later this year in 2020. And understandably, the families of the victims, Dawn and Linda, remain opposed to his release and believe him to be a risk of reoffending again.
I mean, we spoke about this last night, didn't we?
Yeah.
And there's two ways of looking. Well, there's a lot of ways of looking at it. But
yeah.
It's like if Dawn or Linda were my one of my children, then you know, he might be showing empathy now, and that's great, good for him. But
I guess it's tricky because it's like, how do you know that it's genuine empathy?
Mm.
I mean, you can say things. I mean, it's easy to just say things and play, you know, play it up.
But even if he is, though, even if he is showing genuine empathy, and he's took some, you know, educational courses, I don't know. I mean, prison, it depends how you view prison, doesn't it? Is it for punishment and rehabilitation? Well, it's probably both, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is 15 years apiece for the murder of a 15-year-old girl, is that punishment enough?
I don't think
not
so,
in my
no.
House.
No, I don't see that being long enough.
I think it's, I mean, if that was one of my children or someone that was close
because
to
what
me,
age would he be now?
I think he's nearly 60.
Yeah.
And he's
so,
got,
I mean,
potentially 30 years.
Yeah.
He'll have 3 hours. I mean, I'm not, it's a whole new thing, isn't it? But he'll have housing.
Well, he will, though.
Full benefits. You know, he'll have more than
some very unwell people in the community
absolutely
have.
Absolutely.
And that I don't agree with. I don't see why he should get benefits.
People,
sorry.
People
but
homeless. But then again, if he's not, it's difficult, isn't it? Because obviously
Well, some people say he's done his time. That's, you
well,
know.
You see, that's the thing. I don't think he has done his time,
no,
in my opinion. And I can quite understand the victims' families. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for rehabilitation. People make mistakes, but there's mistakes and mistakes, isn't there?
But potentially he could go back and live there again and be
well,
like amongst.
Well, there'd probably be some kind of restrictions.
Oh,
and
would
he'll
there?
Be seen. Well, you would imagine so, wouldn't you? In a small.
I don't know how that works, to be
well,
honest.
Well, that'll be one of the conditions, won't it? If he does get early release.
Oh,
but
okay, yeah.
I mean, in all likelihood, he probably will, won't he? But I just find, I don't know, it doesn't sit easy with me.
No, it's all a weird thing, isn't it?
But I mean, we could talk about this for forevermore. Like I say, I'm all for rehabilitation, and I'm all for.
But it's in a way, like, if you're clever enough, it's easy to fake all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure
you just have to behave yourself.
I'm sure the people that kind of decide these matters. We're not suggesting that they are just, you know, easily, you know.
No, I'm sure.
I'm sure it's a rigorous.
No, what's up? Like, they're not stupid, but how can you measure empathy? You know, it's just one of those things. Does he have to cry? Does he like what's the marker on that?
I mean,
because it is subjective.
It is subjective, but again, if he's showing empathy, yeah, great. You know, that's progress. That's good for his soul or whatever. But I just don't think the punishment's enough, personally.
No.
So, thank you very much for listening to this episode. Hope you've enjoyed it.
Hope you've enjoyed it.
And we'll see you soon.
Yes, in 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time. Goodbye.
Bye.
As always, catch us on facebook.com/madorbad. You can catch us on Twitter. Our handle is @madorbadthepod. And also, we now have a Patreon account, so please go look us up. It is patreon.com/madorbad. You can access exclusive content. We have exclusive episodes only available to Patreon supporters. So go find us.